Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke, and coming up a bit later on the program, we'll talk with Minneapolis indie folk pop singer Caroline Smith. She and her band, The Goodnight Sleeps, are in Rapid City tomorrow performing at the 3rd Annual Americana Music Festival. But first, since the passage of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, there's been plenty of debate regarding how the legislation will affect business. This morning, the Sioux Falls Area Chamber of Commerce held a healthcare summit discussing the Affordable Care Act and what it means for business. SDPB Radio's Keely Smith was at the meeting at the Washington Pavilion, and she joins us on the line. Keely, thanks for coming on the program. Do we have Keely?
Hi, Carl. Thanks for having me here. Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. So the healthcare discussion this morning, who was there?
Well, the Sioux Falls Area Chamber of Commerce brought in a few different people to discuss the different facets of the healthcare law and how it impacts people here. There was an attorney from Sioux Falls. There was also someone to break down the numbers for taxes, and then a representative from each of the two main healthcare systems in Sioux Falls, Sanford and Avera, were also here to explain all of the different impacts that the Affordable Care Act has on their organizations and also on the people who subscribe to their insurance companies.
What were some of the topics that were under discussion? There were certain things that they were focusing on?
They had to focus their discussion somewhat because the Affordable Care Act is gigantic. Mm-hmm. One of the things, though, that was mentioned, interestingly enough, during this presentation, in addition to another healthcare organization conference that's going on right now, is that there's a fundamental shift that's being pushed by the Affordable Care Act and how healthcare actually operates. A lot of the times the discussion applies to Medicaid, but at least Deb Fisher-Clemens with Avera brought it to the forefront overall, saying that we're not just talking about hospitalization anymore. We're talking about caring for the individual all around and what needs to happen for that person. So they're looking at trying to become better partners so that when people come to the hospital, they're able to get the right care and they aren't released too early. And they're also looking specifically at prevention as a way to focus on wellness instead of just focusing on treating diseases. So I think we have a soundbite from her just as she explains this change from treating and diagnosing to really preventing problems.
And the whole crux of healthcare reform and delivery system reform was really a fundamental change in how we do things. But the philosophy was, it's really about health care, not ill care. It's health care. And what we need to be doing, we as providers, need to really be looking at outcomes. Are we making an impact on the health outcome of an individual's life? And we are being forced, appropriately so, I would say, to make some adjustments in how we provide care and how we measure care and how we are not just paid for volume, quantity, and which is what we're being paid now. Fee-for-service says that if we see you 10 times, we're going to get paid 10 times. Doesn't make any difference if we accomplish a positive outcome for your health, and that needs to change. We're talking about quality and episodic and bundled payments. So I quickly wanted to just bring this down to South Dakota and the impact that these delivery system reforms have. We have 8,700 physicians that the physicians' jobs and their offices provide that kind of employment with a $1.8 billion to our state. Hospitals, we have 53 hospitals, almost 21,000 employees with an impact of well over $3.8 billion. And we need to make changes so that we, in fact, can continue this kind of dollar amounts, and because if we don't make the changes, we can't maintain the patients, because the changes in the delivery system reform actually change our reimbursement. It changes our structure of how we are able to provide services. So we really need to look at things. It's forcing us to make some adjustments.
No, Carl, can you hear me now?
I can hear you, yes.
Sorry about the challenges. I love technology when it works correctly. When Fisher-Clemens talks about demonstrating outcomes, she actually explains that there's a list that is established by the federal government, at least for Medicaid, at least for Medicare, and I believe for Medicaid as well, that those are outcomes that they need to fit. So it's not this arbitrary idea of, somebody healthy in this circumstance? Well, are they healthy in this circumstance? There are outcomes that they're specifically looking at, including things like heart attack, heart failure, and pneumonia are the three that Congress examined. She also really focused, she just mentioned it toward the end in that soundbite about that it affects their reimbursement for healthcare organizations if people come back to the hospital again. How that works out is that Congress looked at how healthcare organizations are treating patients, specifically Medicare patients. So they're looking at the money that they're spending on a patient that goes in and uses Medicare. They're looking at when that patient goes home, and if it goes back, if that patient goes back within a certain number of days, in this case, it's 30 days, as according to the federal government, then Congress is looking at why they're being readmitted within those 30 days, specifically for the same condition. Clearly, if you break your hip and then go back a month later for a heart attack, there are different issues. But in this case, the problem is when we're seeing people being treated for pneumonia and using their Medicare dollars, and then we send them home, and 2 weeks back, they've got pneumonia even worse, and they're back in the hospital. There's a problem with that, and it's not just a problem for the patients. On Congress's end, they're concerned that healthcare organizations are taking advantage of the system, because if that patient goes back in again, they get paid a second time. Now, the healthcare organizations say that's simply not the case, but they agree that they need to focus on achieving better outcomes for people. So that means making sure that they're getting the appropriate treatment while in the hospital, and it also means coordinating appropriately with aftercare. So making sure that a patient goes home with the right medications and that they have access to them and know how to take them, and if there's physical therapy involved, making sure that the patient understands how to do that, or that they have a schedule set up for someone to come into the home and help them. And that's where she goes back to this whole concept of that bundling of payments, because the Affordable Care Act makes it no longer about individual appointments or seeing the individual a certain number of times, but rather as a full episode. So within 30 days, about 33 days really, of when something happens, if a patient is being cared for appropriately, and on that hinges the money that these healthcare systems will get from the federal government.
One thing that most people know about the Affordable Care Act is the individual mandate, which was upheld by the Supreme Court, a rather contentious issue that requires almost every American to have health insurance or pay a penalty. Was that something that was discussed this morning as well?
Yes. Tom Pruner, who's a CPA and he's a partner at Ide Bailey, really addressed that from the individual standpoint, because the Supreme Court ruled that this individual mandate really falls under this ability to tax. So people pay a tax if they don't have health coverage starting in 2013. And he uses a lot of numbers, but he explains really well. We have a little bit of audio from him where he explains that in 2014, if you don't have some sort of enrollment in health insurance, you pay a smaller fee. Within 2 years, that number, it goes up, I think, by about seven times. So let's let him break down the numbers, because that's his expertise, and then we can talk a little bit about who doesn't actually have to have health insurance.
So the individual mandate, effective after 2013, indicates that individuals will be required to maintain what's called minimal essential coverage, and if you don't, starting in 2014, you're going to be subject to a penalty, or as Judge Roberts called it, a tax. So in 2014, that penalty amount, it's either the flat penalty or a percentage of your income, whichever is greater. And in 2014, that flat penalty is $95 for an individual. So if I'm a single individual and I make $20,000 and I don't have minimal essential coverage, I'm going to pay a $200 penalty, because 1% of my income is greater than that flat fee. Now, if I'm married filing a joint return, it's 2, because I'm going to have 2 individuals. So 95 times 2, or $190, is going to be my flat penalty, or 1% of our household income, whichever is greater. And then, as you can see, it goes up significantly in 2015, and then it even goes up more in 2016 when it's fully phased in, so that the flat penalty will be $695, or 2.5% of your income, whichever is greater. And for a family of four, the maximum that that flat penalty goes up to is 300% of the $695 or $2,085. So that's how the penalty is calculated if you don't maintain minimal essential coverage.
So there are certainly a lot of numbers that he threw out, and even looking at the slides, it's still hard to figure out, okay, how much does a person pay? The bottom line is, if you don't have coverage in 2014, it's not as big of a deal as it is by 2016, because at a minimum, you're paying $95 if you don't have it in 2 years. In 4 years, you'll be paying $695. So there's a big shift there. Now, there are some exceptions, some people who are excluded from the health care requirement, but there aren't very many. There is a potential for a religious exemption. People who are in prison aren't required to somehow buy their own health insurance while they are incarcerated. There are people who simply can't afford coverage that are considerably, if coverage is more than 8% of their household income, they're not able to pay for that, and so that's a very low number as well. And specifically in South Dakota, something that's interesting about the Affordable Care Act is that the individual mandate doesn't require members of Indian tribes to purchase health insurance. So that's a difference that South Dakota sees that will make a big impact as opposed to some other states that have a lower Native American population. The other question that came up is, well, if they're going to tax me, how are they going to get this tax? And the IRS can't do anything, really, as far as putting a lien on any property or doing anything like that. All they can do is say, hey, you need to pay this, and we are going to demand that you give us the money. And they're limited to simply preventing somebody from getting a tax return. So if you're going to get money back that is $100, and you don't have insurance and you haven't paid it, they're going to subtract that penalty of $95 from your return, and you just won't ever see that.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. We're speaking with SDPB's Keely Smith. She was at the Sioux Falls Area Chamber of Commerce Healthcare Summit meeting this morning discussing the Affordable Care Act and what it means for business. I'm sure there must have been plenty of talk about what the requirements are for employers regarding what they must provide for health insurance. Did I say Keely
right.
Smith?
If
sorry.
If you recall when the Affordable Care Act was being vetted, one of the concerns that people had was that if companies are required to provide insurance to individuals who work for them, will they provide individual insurance, or will they simply say, hey, it's cost me less money to pay the tax that's levied if I don't give them insurance, and so I'll just pay the tax and not actually offer coverage for my employees. Our panel addressed that. There was a question that came from the audience. One person said we can look to Massachusetts as an example when they implemented health care in that state. There was a concern that small businesses were going to drop coverage for their employees. That didn't happen, but they explained that Massachusetts faces some cost concerns as costs rose because they didn't account for it. And the Affordable Care Act on the federal level seeks to mitigate those costs so that lower companies can keep the businesses. And this is still, nothing about the legislation has changed from when it passed. The companies with fewer than 50 employees aren't required to offer that coverage. So we're dealing with small businesses, but that have some girth to them. And I believe Ide Bailey's Tom Pruder has a little bit more about this, because he says that the real impacts of how businesses will cope with either having to provide health insurance or paying the fee has yet to be seen.
We've developed a little a spreadsheet that's pretty detailed that will help companies try to analyze, you know, what's my savings going to be for dropping coverage versus what's the impact going to be on my employees, because it's just not dollars and cents when it comes to the decision as to whether you're going to keep coverage or not. I mean, you got to have employees, you need to have a stable workforce, you don't want a whole lot of turnover there. So there's a whole lot of decisions besides money that go into determining whether you're going to keep coverage or not.
and a representative for one of the Sioux Falls health organizations and their insurance plan also pointed that they're getting questions from small employers who actually subscribe to their insurance, asking questions like, well, what if it's not cheaper than a health insurance exchange that's set up by the government as opposed to paying the tax? Or should I just pay my employees more and then pay the tax on this, and then they can find their own insurance? If I don't offer it, they might get better coverage through an opportunity to buy on the insurance exchange. So there are many, many moving parts and many elements of this for both businesses and employees who are looking to figure out what this healthcare law actually does to their coverage.
Now, the Supreme Court this summer did not uphold the requirement that states expand Medicaid. How does this impact then the costs and benefits of the Affordable Care Act?
I'm sorry, Carl, could you say that one more time for me?
Well, the Supreme Court regarding on how the Medicare impact with Medicaid.
Yes, as the panel talked a little bit about that because they were trying to cover so many different bases, but the bottom line is the only part of the Affordable Care Act that the Supreme Court really did not uphold is this concept that individual states are forced to extend their Medicaid programs or they get all of their federal funding for Medicaid taken away. The Supreme Court says that's just not okay. So they've essentially made the Medicaid expansion voluntary through that ruling. So they can't lose the federal funding for that. But that makes it unclear as to whether states will actually expand Medicaid to get their federal dollars. And that's a problem for specifically the healthcare organizations because they say all of the healthcare organizations pretty much agree to this concept that, sure, we'll take a cut in how much money you're going to give us because, Medicaid or Medicare patients end up paying a lower rate than privately insured, but we'll accept the cuts because at the level that everybody is purchasing insurance, they have 95% coverage because of Medicaid. Right now, the panelists pointed out that there are 8% of the people that they serve never pay them anything. So there's a problem there with the cost really paying off if we're not bringing so many more people into Medicaid if it's voluntary for states. And states like South Dakota face some concerns. Medicaid is expanding. We're adding more people to the program already. So the question is, do we expand it in a way on our own, or do we figure out a way to meet the federal requirements to get additional match dollars for that Medicaid funding?
What was the mood there? Do people have a lot of concerns and questions that were being raised?
The questions came in the form of written cards that were passed out. I was sitting far at the back and noticed lots and lots of cards being passed in. They didn't have as much time for questions as I think they wanted to. But a lot of the questions were the same, and a lot of the questions really dealt with the specifics of what was being covered. These are members of the Sioux Falls Chamber of Commerce for the most part, so they're focused on the business community. They're trying to understand, well, if I have 50 employees that are full-time, how does this law impact me? And what happens if I have part-time employees? And what happens if I feel too great, or if I'm looking out for my employees, how do I best do that? Do I provide the insurance? Do I let them figure it out and pay the tax? So all of these questions, all of these things we've been discussing were also topics that 150 or so people who listened to the panel were quite interested in and trying to figure out how it impacts them. And then, of course, the rest of the business community, and when it impacts the business community, and the businesses are changing the way that employees are able to get health coverage, that's certainly changing how employees are looking at it, because I think they're getting a lot of questions from their employees about, well, what does this mean? Am I going to have health care? Am I not going to have health care? If I don't have health care, where am I going to get it, and how am I going to make sure that my family is covered so that if something bad happens, we can handle it, and so that we can make sure that we're being healthy and preventing anything.
Did you get the sense that people at the healthcare summit were getting their questions answered or clearing things up at all?
For the most part, it's hard to clear a lot of this up. I'll give the panelists credit; they did try, but there were some questions that they simply didn't have the answers to. Or I mentioned earlier part-time employees. the law is kind of maybe a little bit vague when it comes to part-time employees, because if somebody has 100 part-time employees and doesn't think that they have to provide health care, that's not really the case because you have to transfer it into what the full-time equivalent would be, and then you have to provide health insurance based on whether you meet the threshold for that under the Affordable Care Act. So people did get their questions answered, but the question period was certainly a little rushed at the end, and there were more questions than there were answers for. So at no point did any of the panelists or anybody who was asking questions ever imply that we've got this all figured out. There's still litigation happening as far as the Affordable Care Act goes, including on the individual mandate. So it's not that healthcare, the discussion, is going away anytime soon, and it certainly all hasn't been decided. The other thing we have to remember is that the Affordable Care Act is specifically structured to roll out over the period of a decade. So there are certain things that we will see in 2014 that we're not seeing now. There are things we will see in 2015 and 2016 and 2020 that involve the law that are not things that we can look at and analyze at the moment. So there's a lot of uncertainty because the United States has never done this before. So it's kind of new territory for most of the providers and also for the people who are working and hoping to keep their health insurance or at least find a way to make sure that their families are taken care of.
Well, Keeley, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday.
You're welcome, Carl.
That was SDPB's Keeley Bultina reporting from this morning's healthcare summit sponsored by the Sioux Falls Area Chamber of Commerce. Coming up after a short break, we'll talk with Minneapolis indie folk pop singer Caroline Smith. She and her band, The Good Night Sleeps, are in Rapid City tomorrow, performing at the 3rd Annual Americana Music Festival. I'm Carl Gerke, and you're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.